4.10 of the blue band and the regular band, and we're doing some Game of Thrones, and it's 4.10, it's the podcast.
What do you want from Jim Harbaugh? What I want from Jim Harbaugh is I was watching the handshake. And after the handshake, Harbaugh just kind of trots off to the locker room. And James Franklin turns around and gives him the stink eye for like a full 5 seconds. I don't know what they said, but that's what I want from my Jim Harbaugh in a 42-7 victory over Penn State.
You want him to get under everyone's skin just a little bit?
I want, what's your deal, Jim Harbaugh? And I felt like the look coming from James Franklin was a very much a what's your deal look.
That would explain where most of our team got that attitude from. Don't they say that good teams take on the personality of their coach?
I think they say that good teams outgain the opposition by 4-1 until a sad touchdown drive at the end of the game. We have to like have a judgment from you.
Are we doing this now?
No, we're not doing this now.
No, we can't. We got to bury the lead.
What are we burying the lead?
Well, if I'm calling it a sad touchdown drive, we are.
Is that the lead from this podcast? Is that what everybody wants to know
about?
What else
was there to do in the second half?
Call a timeout.
This is your personal brand now. Like, people were tweeting me like, I'm actively rooting for a sad field goal now. I'm like, thanks. I kind of was too.
So I've won you over as well?
Well, no. It's just like once they're in field goal range, it's like, well, let's get him in 4th and 15.
Did you kind of not want him to kick it when it was 4th and 2?
I mean, I did want him to kick it when it was 4th and 2 because I wanted like the ensuing gif from Harbaugh. Although that was a little bit different situation because that was 28-0 in the third.
Yeah.
And that was like hypothetically you could come back and win the game. And that was why the look happened. You know, is a field goal sadder when you can win the game or when you can't win the game?
I think we're talking about this now.
We obviously are. So come down from the mountain and adjudicate.
The more tears on the sad field goal have, in my opinion...
Okay, are you spelling tears with an I or an A? Or both? Was this a Sonic joke?
No.
No. All right. Go ahead.
It is directly related to how good your program is. Okay. If you need to feel better about your butt-whooping by scoring points in the last couple minutes, whatever way, that is like when Western kicked a field goal,
right?
Or Houston. You remember when Houston kicked a field goal against
50-3 game?
Yeah, it's like 40-something to 3 or something.
Yeah. What I remember about that game is that the next week we played Notre Dame, beat them 38-0, and the student section chanted
Houston's better, which is one of the best chants I've ever heard in sports. But I actually went to a coach's conference, and I talked to Art Briles, and he was the coach at Houston at that time. And he was actually talking about that experience where he was trying to build a program at Houston, and they had a freshman quarterback, and Michigan was just killing them. And he said that he tried to get in field goal range on that last drive so that they could get some points and take it away and go home and be like, we scored, you know, we got points against Michigan, they're a top five team, blah, blah, blah. So, like, in that situation... it is kind of a sad field goal, but there's a takeaway there.
Sure.
Is there a takeaway for Penn State's, like, determination to try to get down and, hey, we got points in Ann Arbor?
I want to say yes.
I mean, that's what makes it sad, is it's like you're trying to justify and make your destruction be like, well, but we fought back a little
defeat
bit.
Defeat with dignity.
Exactly.
Right.
Do you think the Penn State fan or the Penn State players in the locker room afterwards were like happy that they got that touchdown? Like turning to each other, like, "Hey, man, at least we struck back against their backups."
See, now I've played enough sports in different ways that when people say that to me when we're getting killed, I want to punch them in the face.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't care if we scored a goal. Do you remember the goal that I think it was Griffin Luce scored against Michigan State, and it was 4-0. It was 2 years ago. It was 4-0 Michigan State, and with like a minute to go in the game, Luce takes a slap shot from the blue line and scores, and so it's 4-1, and State has just run us out of Yost. And the student section goes crazy. And I'm just like,
I don't remember this.
That infuriated me. I mean, yeah, sure, cheer. We scored a goal. Ha. And then it's over. You just got run out of your own building by a team that is in the bottom 20% of, like, college hockey. That's not okay. And that's kind of what this...
So sad goal.
Yeah. And that's...
We have a whole, like, pantheon going on here.
You have to know where you're at and understand it.
We can't spend 30 minutes on this topic.
You brought it up.
I brought it up, but now we're done with the topic.
I was going to talk about it in the later section.
Sure. Let's talk about 42-7.
Let's talk about our sponsors.
Let's talk about our sponsors. We'd like to thank Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, University of Michigan Alumni Association, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. Anyway, 42-7 over Penn State in a game that was 14-0 at halftime. And you're feeling okay. And then as soon as Michigan gets 21 points, you're like, ball game.
Yep.
And that 21st point was scored on an extra point after a rollout on which Patterson finds Donovan Peoples-Jones on the same kind of corner route rollout that he didn't throw in the Wisconsin game. Do you guys remember that?
I thought it was the Michigan State game.
No, it was the Wisconsin game. There was a corner route against Michigan State he didn't throw, but that we're talking about kind of a deeper route where he rolls out.
Okay, yeah. No, it's coming back. Yeah.
He's got a guy.
Yeah.
It's Perry this time, and he's open by.
No, you're right. It was the same reaction by the defense where the cornerback was supposed to sink into that and didn't. So now he's just got the cover two safety dragging behind
right.
him.
Right, and that was, I thought, a little bit of progress there where it's like, yep, this guy's open. I'm going to throw him the ball, which hasn't always happened with Patterson and didn't always happen in this game. But, you know, he did enough. Only 18
throws. Also the second touchdown, which is what confused me.
Sure. No, this is the third touchdown.
Third touchdown was the RPO to Gentry.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then.
Sorry, that's why I had a quizzical look on my face.
It took so long to get to that third touch. The second touchdown actually felt like the end. Because it was 7-0, but we were just killing them again in yardage.
Yeah, and that's just been kind of the story of this year. Where it's Michigan has 200 yards and the opposition has like 32. And you look up at the scoreboard and you're like, this isn't quite what the domination in play-to-play.
You're basically waiting for that three-score lead. And once it gets to that point, especially after a decent amount of time has passed that you know, okay, they don't really have anything on offense. Yeah, they could get lucky and get some points because someone falls down, which ironically happened. But you're just, once it gets to that level, now.
Yeah, like how many disaster plays is Michigan going to turn in on a weekly basis? One in this game, and they didn't take advantage of it.
At halftime, we had a 3-1 yardage advantage and the only turnover in the game. And like,
I think it was like a 6-1 yardage advantage.
It was fine. It was insane.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.
And their coach already publicly admitted that his offense can't do anything, so he has to try to get a big play.
Right. Right. By taking we're going to get into frames, Jim.
Yeah, but let's concentrate on the offense here. So the first drive they come out, and I utter to my section, run the ball. Like I'm a Georgia fan with Mike Bobo as my offensive coordinator. And they run it 8 times for a touchdown. And, you know, the stadium is just like, and, you know, they do the Michigan thing. The most Michigan thing in 2018 is when the fullback comes on the field and the whole crowd goes, yeah.
We were chanting, we want bench. We want bench before that.
And then, you know, they run a read option where everybody's looking at Mason and the corner is wide open because nobody has yet understood that sometimes Shea Patterson keeps the ball.
And James Franklin was still a little surprised about that in his postgame presser.
Was he?
He just kind of said, well, now they've added this new wrinkle. And I watched it this morning and I was like, new wrinkle? You've been doing that since...
He reads Penn Live, probably.
They've been doing that.
Are you talking about that David Jones article?
Yeah! Oh, Michigan and their caveman offense are going to have no chance against a modern machine like Penn State.
So, I mean, that first run drive was kind of established what this game was, but then they kind of had this period in the second quarter and into the third quarter where Penn State had a new kind of twist blitz stunt that they were running that was consistently getting, I think, his Parsons into the backfield. Mm-hmm. So that was the guy who was tackling a bunch of guys at or near the line of scrimmage for a couple of quarters.
I think Michigan was trying to screw with him because he was the true freshman playing a linebacker where he's never played before.
I mean, he wasn't really playing linebacker. What he was doing is he was just turning into a defensive lineman,
right?
Like after some other guys cleared out. And it was a little disappointing because last week, you know, they completely nerfed the twist blitz that Michigan State runs all the time, and this felt like something that Michigan probably hadn't seen before, unlike the twist blitz, but it kind of took them longer than I wanted them to take to actually kind of fix that. But they did. I mean, they got up to 250 rushing yards in this game. So, not bad.
Yeah, I thought Michigan came out, their first drive, well, I mean, not necessarily scripted, but like really attacked what Penn State is not good at. And there were a couple times before the big run where Michigan was really close to breaking one. They had a down G play where it was just Higdon and a blocker against a safety, and the safety actually made the play. And then, like, the next play, I think, is the big 50-yard run.
Yeah, and that was actually...
split zone.
Well, I was actually talking about the down G you were talking about.
Okay, yeah.
Where it looked like... Do you remember the weird play from the Wisconsin game?
Down C?
No, well, they're like, pulling both the front side guard and the center. And then, like, on Wayne, he was just kind of wandering around looking for a member of the secondary to hit. And I... And if I look at all these plays in a lot of detail, I'm like, all right, what on earth is this thing? I just feel like defensive coordinators are probably having a similar difficulty with some of these plays because it's just like, well, that is definitely something I will label a pin and pull concept.
They have certainly never faced a base down G team before.
Right. And, I mean, there were some hiccups in this game, but, you know, when you are able to run, what was it, 54 times?
52
times versus, I mean,
some of those might be Patterson.
Yeah, versus 18 passes though, like that's, and you get 5 yards a carry. I mean, that's domination, and that's what we needed to see happen against a team that was very good on third and long, and very good on getting you in third and long, but didn't happen for them.
Not enough.
What I liked about the run game is that it was a very shared success. So some plays where Higdon made a really good cut. Sometimes it was one offensive lineman or another making. Sometimes it was RPS. I didn't think any one matchup or any one player was really making that running game go. It was the whole team was just having consistent success against them.
Well, and Evans also had a number of carries too. He had 12 carries and had 57 yards. So
yeah, and he breaks his long run out to the edge where he kind of gives his like shimmy juke to two different guys on the same play, and that turns it from a 15-yard run into a 35-yard run.
Yeah, I thought he set up his blocks pretty well.
Yeah.
And then used his his receivers are blocking downfield as well, and he cut behind them.
And like we hadn't really seen much from Evans because he was injured for a while.
Right.
And then he's running a lot of the belly plays, which is a little bit odd, but I guess just a way to save some wear and tear on Higdon's tires. But he gets tackled pretty easily a lot, and you're like, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah,
and then he gets in the open field, and you're like, this is what he should be doing. And then they have the flare pass, which goes for 35 yards, which doesn't really even get much of a rub. Like, they're obviously trying to rub the guy in man coverage.
Right.
He get it a little bit, but then he's just gone.
Well, the guy who's trying to man up on him started like a middle linebacker.
Yeah.
You're just like, all right, if you're going to have a race with Chris Evans, you're probably going to lose that.
That was Koa Farmer, who is their
former safety.
Yeah, so he should actually be somewhat fast.
He's not this year. That was one of the part of my preview, is that he's gained like 30 pounds since we saw him play safety, and he looks like a safety who just gained 30 pounds. Like, he hit the pizzas.
Hit the pizzas.
He's not fast anymore.
He also had to, like, weave through, because, like you said, they were trying to rub him, and they had two guys running slants, and so that's a number of bodies he has to wade through, where Evans is just booking it and then turning his head, and all of a sudden he has the ball. And, you know, he's in a lot of space.
And this is going to be more interesting for next year, because there are certain things that I think Evans is really, really good at. And
yeah.
It's not really an emphasis in the offense right now, because they have Caron Higdon. He's obviously the main man. It's just they'll have to do some adaptation next year.
Well, maybe we've seen a preview.
Yeah. You wanted to bring up the pass protection.
Well, I rewatched the game late last night, and I was trying to look. I mean, that's kind of been the thing this year, right? Is can they keep Patterson up? And so I've been trying to look at different pass protections. And if is there a fault? Is there a guy that gets beat? Is it a blitz? Whatever. And from what I could tell, I didn't see many organic pressures. I mean, they would get in there eventually, but I thought that when Patterson was leaving, he was leaving a relatively clean pocket, and there wasn't a guy that was posing a serious imminent threat. Maybe he prefers to be on the move when he throws. Maybe he feels like he doesn't see his original read, and now he wants to buy time.
I think that was true before this game. I didn't see that.
He has a timer that goes off. Like the DPJ touchdown we're talking about.
Yeah.
That was definitely like a, I need to get out of the pocket, and there wasn't really an imminent threat.
Yeah, and that's like we talked about, well, one of the tackles get beaten, and I didn't really see it. The best time that I thought that somebody beat somebody in terms of a pass rush was the Gentry hold.
Which was legitimate.
Sure.
Yeah, Runyon got shoved back. Like, I remember one time specifically that Patterson had to go. The rest of the pocket was clean. But, like, I was watching
Runyon. You're
talking
about, like, a minus one.
Rushing. Yeah, exactly. And that was what I was kind of getting at. These are really good defensive ends they were going against. And for the most part, they survived, which is all you can really ask.
Yeah, I didn't think.
Tackle against those guys.
Like, the one sack was basically at the end of the half where Patterson's just like running. He runs out of the pocket and then realizes, okay, I just can't have anything super bad happen. So he just slides, and then they knee and go to halftime. So I didn't think that there was a lot of pressure per se, especially from when we're comparing this to the Notre Dame game.
And they gave him time to get. So the long one that DPJ couldn't, that was just a little short on DPJ. There was pressure coming up the middle, and both tackles I thought had been beaten. But like he had a good 2 seconds to get that off. So
how beaten can you be if you're able to get off a deep shot that doesn't really have?
He couldn't step up into it, and he was about to get hit from both sides. So
we'll see what I think on review. But if these are the examples of like it didn't go so well that are coming out.
Minus
like,
ones. We're talking about minus ones. Right.
And that was kind of the whole point when you said I wanted to talk about this is I thought the pass protection was actually pretty good.
And that does go back to the game plan. Because
right.
They run, and then by the time that you're actually dropping back on these play-action passes, you know they're not thinking that they need to go get an edge rush. So Michigan did a really good job of neutralizing those guys mentally before many of the passes. And they stayed out of third and long
for the most part. There was
day.
A few, but...
I mean, yeah.
Depending on what your definition of third and long was, they would get into... Third and five, six, seven, but nothing much longer than
that's third and medium.
Okay.
So you can get a pass out for 7 yards on a slant real quick, and there's not much a rusher can do about it.
Not sure if they were in one longer than that I remember.
I can't think of one either.
So it's weird because I do the game previews, and I've been doing them for 10 years. And when I do one, I'm like, oh, this is what this team seems like, and this is probably what's going to happen. And then the exact opposite of that happens constantly, and Michigan is like a very bad football team that does bad at football. And now things are happening that I think should happen, and I don't know how to deal with it.
I think we're all there.
So you told me to get – I told you 49-3 yesterday – or on Friday.
Well
– And you go, no, you can't do that. You can't say 49-3.
I'm talking more about like the shape of the game and what it feels like. And, you know, going in this game, I'm like, all right, you got to stay out of third and long. You got to run the ball. And you got to protect Patterson by just kind of using him as the deep shot sidelight. And that's what happened. And those deep shots were pretty, pretty good. So we've talked about the People Jones touchdown, which is about 30 yards. Not quite a deep shot, but he hits one to Collins, and that, like, there wasn't much wind, but there were, like, times when, like, there'd be a gust here and there, and that's kind of felt like what happened there.
I thought Collins actually turned around on it, and if he just ran underneath it, it would have been perfect.
Well, Collins, like, slowed up for a second, and then...
He had to slow up and find the ball.
I don't know if he had to find the ball or if there was actually like a little bit of wobble in it because of a...
It was a little wobbly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just mean like that there was a little bit of gust of wind and that's why he misjudged it. I don't know.
It was... The point is it's slightly underthrown.
Right, and it could have been a little bit farther away from the safety. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Like...
But that was six.
Yeah, it could have been.
Because he was behind everyone. Yeah. There was no one catching him on that.
And then he was wide open on another deep shot.
I got my whole section to yell about that because I stood up and I saw him breaking right down the field. And I was like, he's got Collins. And everybody is like, no. And on the check down.
You that was an accidental Aziz Ansari impression, by the way. Yeah, he checks it down for 5 yards. And then someone in my section is like, I'll take that all day. And I was like, what? No! Did you look at the man with the tall, the downfield?
It's a very Michigan response.
And then Tarik Black.
Yeah, and then Black had his called back for the holding, and that was...
legit hold.
It was legit. I just, I thought that when they brought him in the ensuing, like, second and goal that they were going to...
Throw
him
a fade.
To it.
Yeah. Well, and then the Penn State's guy came and played up on him, too, and I'm like, okay, Black didn't get his touchdown. Let's go get him his touchdown now.
But that was, he was wide open down the sideline and hit basically in stride in a little bit of a tough pocket because that guy was coming through. And Patterson continues just to have this ability to hit people downfield that I would call uncanny because he's not just hitting most of these guys. He's hitting these guys so they can keep running.
Yeah, I think, and when he misses, he generally misses safe. He's not overshooting a lot of guys.
I can't really remember, like, deep shots that he's just outright missed.
Yeah. No, it's what I mean is, like, when it's not perfect, it's a little bit underthrown and it allows his big athletic wide receiver to make a play on the ball.
Right.
And that's what you want. Because, we've seen the other one.
Speaking of which, a reminder that Black was their best receiver going into this year. And
well, I mean, that's supposedly.
I
think
supposedly,
Peoples-Jones has probably had an argument there.
And they're good friends, and I'm sure they're going to keep having that argument, and it's going to work out to the benefit of all of us. But my point is Black is good, and having him back gives another dimension to this offense. I no offense against Collins, because he's been pretty good this year too, but I think Black is a possible star receiver.
Speaking of other dimensions to this offense, an RPO touchdown to Zach Gentry.
That was pretty nice.
You know, you get all this run going, and you get people respecting your quarterback's ability to run, and that's kind of the next frontier. And this is only the second time we've seen them run it. And I kind of feel like we're not going to see it the next 2 weeks.
Hope not.
And then we might see quite a bit of it against Ohio State because they have linebackers who can be moved with the power of your mind. That's one of the – I mean, I follow Ross Fulton, who writes for Rivals on Twitter, and that's one of his chief complaints about the defense is that the linebackers get out of position a lot.
Well, I thought they were going to fix it in there. We're not talking about Ohio State right now, but, like, Nebraska was hitting them with a lot of RPOs this week too. So it
didn't really get fixed there.
Yeah. Well, and like, I brought this up a little bit earlier, but when Patterson completed a third down – pass to DPJ, I think, on a slant.
The slant.
He previously looked off the middle linebacker.
Yeah.
And then, like we talked about it, where
there was a fourth down.
The fourth down attempted conversion to Gentry, he did not look him off, and you said he maybe threw it a little bit late.
I thought that could have been complete, but he just, like...
Just waited.
That needs to be, like, you know, a three-step drop rhythm where it's like bang, 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 out.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of hitched up on it, and that gave the linebacker enough time to get over.
I think he was playing. Yeah, if he'd get you wait a little one more second, you're supposed to hit Higdon because Higdon was coming loose underneath there. And if that linebacker goes after,
I thought he had it.
That's
he just
what you do.
He did have it. He just waited,
didn't
or waited. He didn't look the guy off. One of those two,
right? And like, you know, we talked about how he saw Peoples-Jones when he rolled out of the pocket, and that's progress.
Mm-hmm.
Still, kind of like hiccups here and there, where it's just like he's not quite locked in. And he's a first-year guy in this offense who's transferring, so that's to be expected somewhat. But it's a little bit like just you just want him to be like, oh, you're almost awesome. You're almost like
– Well, I feel like we kind of come off sometimes as being like down on Shea or like not as positive as we could be, especially given like some of the scores and everything. But I think that point that you just made is kind of the big one where he is in – his first year in this offense, and he is adjusting to a lot of new and different things, and he is doing probably a very good job of doing this, and we're kind of looking at him like just kind of pushing to a ceiling, getting to those like through his like graduate level classes of this, and he's not quite there yet, but he's also doing a really good job, and he's like being successful at not only like keeps but on different types of passes too. And I just don't want it to be as negative as sometimes we come off.
He's not a Heisman candidate, and I think we're asking him. We're hoping that he possibly could be that one day.
Right,
but
he looks like a guy who could be because we talked about earlier the deep ball accuracy is uncanny.
Yeah,
and he's fast enough to be a threat on the ground. I don't think he screwed up a single pull decision in this game.
I don't think so either. And the ones that he made were he took advantage of.
And there were actually a couple of times when he was confronted with guys on the edge, and he was able to do the Tate Forcier thing where he's just like, oh, I'm not just a quarterback, I can actually cut.
Yeah.
And he was able to, like, there was a guy who could have tackled him for 4 yards, and he was able to juke that guy entirely.
Yeah, we actually made the Tate Forcier conversation in my part of the stands. We're like, oh, that was just like Tate.
Thank you. Everybody was so mad at me.
But everyone remembers that one part of, like, if people remember that part of Tate. I have a nice piece. I have a nice section this year too.
People were so mad at me when I was like, this isn't a typical 5-star quarterback at Tate Forcier. And what?
Well, people forget about how good he actually was in 2009.
Yeah, like, come on, people. Anyway,
the other thing is I think that we need to almost apologize to the tackles because we kind of dogged them for a while, and like now we've gone through 2/3 of the year and they've held up.
I don't think we
lot.
Need to apologize. No. I think we need to acknowledge the fact that they're much better than they were in the Notre Dame game, because in the Notre Dame game
and the improvement
very bad.
Sure, they were. But we were kind of calling for maybe give Hudson or Stuber or Mayfield a look. And I think that they have proven that they deserve to be on the field. Not only that they deserve to be on the field, but they're actually growing really well and becoming pretty good tackles.
Maybe. I have to go.
I mean, every week we go through this.
I have to go back and, like, there was my declaration in the UFR that if Runyon survived this week, I would call him legitimately good.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to happen. Bushel Beatty has made a ton of progress. He's still a guard playing tackle.
Well, okay. People are going to be like that to an extent.
But he's like a legitimate, I think, upper tier Big Ten guard who happens to be playing tackle. And, you know, Willekes was able to exploit that a bit last week, but we didn't see it this week, in part because of the game plan. And he's like not an offense killing problem. And that was what I thought both these guys were going to do.
Right. And we were a bit terrified of thinking of these being our starting tackles going into the latter part of our schedule.
Right.
And I don't think we're in that same place anymore.
Well, no, but I mean,
you never know and blah, blah, blah,
right.
Obviously, but it's not the sense of impending doom that it might've been.
No. I mean, as you mentioned, there was really not a whole lot of organic pass rush, and it doesn't really matter if they're like leaving a tight end in, because the guy you're getting as the tackle when the tight end is blocking the end is Robert Windsor, who has 3.5 sacks on the year, or their other guy who's also
Givens.
Mike
Kenny Givens,
who's also Mike 1-4, right? So like for those guys to be able to block those guys is also impressive.
Yes.
They missed the screen pass, which is like,
yeah. I credited Penn State. On the rewatch, I credited Penn State's lineman. That was Givens again, by the way.
He did a good job of like making himself very big and forcing the kind of looped artillery shell throw, which was just a little bit off. And I understand why it was, but that was set up for...
It was a really good call. That was a great call.
That was set up for a big, big game.
Yep, because he had at least 3 guys in front of him.
And it used action that they used that jet action that they used twice earlier in the game at that point too. So like it was set up for that moment as well.
Well, I mean they had the jet action and then they ran a zone read opposite of it.
Right.
And I was like, oh man, leave that one in the garage, because it was already like 35-0, and I was like,
they had 2 weeks to practice for this, and
I know.
They can't run everything against Ohio State.
One thing I did like is that they started noticing that at certain points, Penn State would be following the tight end when he went in motion. So there was a split zone that broke for like 20 yards in the second half because they ran split zone, they got man coverage, and the tight end got 2-for-1 because he had his man, and then he got a defensive end. So there was no linebacker to the front side.
They did that, and the other thing I saw them messing with tight ends, this might be getting too into the weeds, but they saw the linebackers like to fire really quickly against run action to the front side, so they were sealing them instead of trying to crack them. So you'd have a tight end coming around, and then the linebacker comes with him, and instead of trying to keep the linebacker inside, they let him get outside and then just sealed him outside, and that was actually how they got the long run on the first drive with Higdon on the split zone.
Well, yeah, one of those linebackers just buried himself in the front side of that play with no hope of getting back.
Yeah.
And I think that might be just Cole Farmer isn't a very good linebacker. I did enjoy the occasional comments on Penn State message boards that Michigan's number 7 was a little bit better than their number 7. Because they turned down Kalik Hudson several times. He was like, hey, I want to go to Penn State. And James Franklin was like, nah. And then he called timeout. I thought the targeting that got waved off was a good call. I thought that was not targeting. It was a heavy hit. It was a violent hit, but I thought it was both fair and to the shoulder.
Oh,
that was where the first contact was the shoulder. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
So I think most things are not targeting. I thought that the way he launched himself seemed to be kind of intent to hit the head.
But he didn't hit the head.
I don't care what the result is. I think the intent should be.
No, he didn't hit with his helmet at all. He hit with his shoulder, and he hit DPJ's shoulder. So it was a big hit, but it was not targeting.
I think if you launch yourself, then you're putting yourself in a position where a hit is going to
be. Okay, what's the difference between that hit and the hit that Metellus had on Davis last week?
Metellus came in totally on his shoulder.
And that
happened
in this hit,
too. Either.
He didn't lead with his helmet. Neither of these
plays. The way I remember it was leading with his helmet. If he wasn't,
he
I
was
concede.
Not.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, the hit that Metellus had on Davis was clean.
Yeah, and this was clean, too. I thought that was a good overturn.
Fair.
There were a couple. I just watched the Ohio State-Nebraska game right before we went in, and there were a couple targetings that like made no sense. They ended up calling targeting. So my targeting sense at that moment was like, I guess everything is targeting right now.
Yeah. All right, I think that's all we have on the offense. Anybody?
Gentry versus Sharif Miller didn't go great, but we know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was watching Runyon a whole bunch because, you know, we said we'd give him a star. And
we didn't say that.
You said you'd say he's legitimately good.
Yeah, that's a star.
Which is a star. Yeah. A star is all Big Ten. And I think Runyon in this Big Ten might sneak in as a Michigan State basketball 2018 Big Ten champions, all Big Ten left tackle.
I don't know what that means, but let's take a break.
Michigan State's basketball team was terrible last year. Wait.
Let's take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
What were the skies like when you were young?
They went on forever. We lived in Arizona, and the skies always had little fluffy clouds in them, and they were long and clear. There were lots of stars at night. And when it would rain, they were beautiful, the most beautiful skies, as a matter of fact. The sunsets were purple and red and yellow and on fire. The clouds would catch the colors everywhere. That's neat, because I used to look at them all the time when I was little. You don't see that.
Defense in this game, I think the number that jumps off the box score to me, Miles Sanders, 7 carries for 14 yards. And what are you going to do when you have a gimpy quarterback and you can't even hand off to your running back? Like, they tried it once early. Like, I think their second drive, their first play was like, let's try inside zone to Miles Sanders. And it went for 0 yards. And then they were just like, we're done with this. No more. Like, we're going to go in the Quan gun for some reason and run some inverted veers, which is just power, really. And that's not going to work either. I don't understand. Like, they got the big play on it early last year.
Yeah.
But that was because they had the cool idea to pass set on Rashawn Gary. That wasn't because, like, the idea was amazing. And then they got 2 yards of carry on it.
The idea is from back in the 1910s. It's like shift over one run. But it worked last year, one, because Gary,
it worked once.
It worked once because Gary got way upfield because it was a night game and Gary was rushing
right
way upfield.
But that didn't have anything to do with who was
and because,
in one spot.
Well, I thought, too, that Michigan had probably practiced that game to stop Saquon Barkley, and they were focused on stopping the running back. So if you flip the quarterback and running back on the second play of the game, it messes with you a little
bit. But they kept doing it.
But that's
and
my whole point.
And then they kept doing it in this
Ricky
game.
Ronnie is not Joe Moorhead, but he has Joe Moorhead's car, and he doesn't know what to do with it.
Okay, that is a good point. So a lot of the stuff that they were doing in this game kind of felt like, you know, they have the same structure of their offense, but the guy in charge of it isn't a
right
crazy genius. He's just a guy.
Right, and they have the plays are cool, but the plays really
they don't build on each other.
Yeah, and they used to get you. Like, they set it up, and then here's a 60-yard hit on you out of nowhere because, like, they tweaked a little thing.
Yeah, and the first play from scrimmage, it's a 25-yard RPO slant to their tight end.
Right.
Where Hudson can't even make a tackle on it.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, here we go again. And that was not a correct take.
That was most of their offense in the first half.
That was probably just about half of it, yeah. And a lot of that was the fact that Chase Winovich and Josh Uche were completely unblockable. And that's good, right? Like, if Josh Uche played more than 20% of Michigan snaps, how many sacks would he have?
Well, he was also in third and long a lot. So,
well, sure.
His
sack per snap rate has to lead the country. There's no question about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I would love
to know, like, I have PFF stats or something like that to know, like, how it compares to, like, Bosa's.
Well, I mean, well, I'm sure we're going to see him on some, like, postseason look at this guy for next year stats.
Like, the Bosa's, especially in the early careers, would have just incredible sack rates.
Well, I keep comparing him to Winovich.
The best point that you could do is like a 2016
Winovich.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about this is both these guys were getting sacks by dodging inside the left tackle.
Yeah.
Sometimes without any support.
Yep.
So sometimes there's a stunt that comes around and that guy is supposed to hold the edge. But like Winovich's first sack, I think he was just like YOLO. Are we still saying YOLO?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, you just asked the 38-year-old if we're still saying YOLO.
That's a good point. Are we still saying YOLO, Dave?
I don't even watch movies.
We are cool.
All right. If you are a 16-year-old high school student, please tell us if we're still saying YOLO.
Hashtag miss you ace.
I'm guessing the answer is no. Anyway, so he was just like, I can do this, and then he did it. And I'm glad that he did, because it was fun and good.
Yeah, well, I mean, Uche's sack against Michigan State was killing their left tackle on the outside, right? So his speed rush has been...
Well, he had two.
Right, but the first one on that drive, they ended their first drive. And this one on their first drive, he went inside of the left tackle. And you mentioned there might have been...
That was actually... There was someone outside who was supporting that. So they've been running this stunt where the guy coming out, the looper, is really just to draw the attention of the left tackle.
To open up the hole.
And then the defensive end is supposed to like stay as close to that tackle as possible and not let that guard get over and get to him. And Uche got a sack on it last week. He got a sack on it this week. Winovich forced a throwaway last week. And it's just been something where they have the personnel to really do it, and it's working really, really well.
Speaking of the personnel to do it, one of the times they did it, we ended up with Kemp on the edge with McSorley. And Carlo Kemp runs him out.
Yeah.
I mean, that was directly at me in the stands. And, like, you could see, like, Kemp turn towards you and realize what was happening. And just, like, the, oh, shit, look on his face. But he took a good angle, and he ran his ass off, and it was a one-yard gain, so...
I mean, that's what you want from defensive tackles in this game, is when he's breaking the pocket to cut him down. And it also, I think, goes back to the fact that he started as a defensive end and was a defensive end last year and knows that's...
Also, he knows his limitations. He's like, all right, I can get this guy out at this point on the field.
Right, you're not trying to get a sack.
He knows his pursuit angle very well, so that's good.
Anyway, the reason why it's important is if you can get away with that, if you can survive with Kemp on the edge with Trace McSorley, you can
Chase Winovich.
You can get Chase Winovich inside. So by doing that, that's how you dominate. That's how you get a great matchup inside, because you just gave yourself a disadvantage outside. And getting away with that is huge.
So we should talk a little bit about the defensive tackles, I think, because last year in this game,
they kind of got worked.
They got worked. And, you know, Brian Monet had a couple of plays where he was blown out by single blocking. And, you know, they have this one run to Sanders, and it gets stuffed, and they're like, nah. And these are the same guys, the same defensive tackles minus Mo Hurst, the same offensive line, except for
minus, their left guard's gone, but then they have a new center who is a 5-star, by the way.
And so this is a situation where, you know, you get a lot of player development from Michigan on the interior. I think the return of Rashawn Gary also had a little bit to do with that. So people are now upset that, you know, Gary didn't have an enormous impact, but he's getting pulled on every passing down because they got to put Uche on the field.
I said to someone near me, it's pretty cool when you can take Rashawn Gary off the field and bring a better pass rusher in.
I think that Gary might supplant Kwity Paye in that package. I'm just speculating.
But they also might be, I mean, we don't know how healthy he really is and how much pain he's going through, and you're kind of like, hey, how many like more hits does he need to take in the next couple of weeks?
When we get to Ohio State and we're talking about a team that has to pass with a stand-up quarterback in there, I would like to see Rashawn Gary kind of move down to 3-tech in place of Kemp for those kinds of plays.
Passing downs, passing downs.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he's got the size to play inside, too.
I know, but he's just not practiced at it, you know. So if he gets a double, he might not be like...
Passing downs. Yeah. Which there will be some.
There will be. And really kind of the only period in this game where Michigan's defensive line wasn't dominating the Penn State offensive line was kind of at the end of the first half.
The last drive.
Yeah, where they're in a hurry-up set. Michigan doesn't have the rush package on the field. You know, guys are a little tired because right before halftime and there's a lot of plays kind of back-to-back. And they're able to sit back in the pocket for, I guess, 3 or 4 consecutive plays and be pretty comfortable.
Yep.
And I was like, what is going on? I hate this. And then I was like, all right, this never happens. Like,
this is why you're not used to it.
Right. Like, this used to happen literally all the time, and now this almost literally never happens.
Well, and Hudson had Sanders, I think, at the line of scrimmage on 2nd and 10 and just kind of missed him. And Sanders, I think, I'll give Sanders credit on that. I think he juked him. He stopped pretty hard and...
I mean, he's a former 5-star back for a reason.
Absolutely. He picked up 9 and forced a 3rd-and-1. They converted. And if Hudson makes that tackle, now all of a sudden it's third and long again, right. And we've seen how that went.
And Michigan only really got one let off in this game. So Brandon Watson stumbles, yeah. And there's a guy free for a touchdown, and McSorley just kind of pulls the string.
Also probably wasn't used to looking at that either.
No. And
he didn't look great either.
No, he looked a little bit in the worky category.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, because I mean – his final numbers were like 5 of 13 for 83.
Jeez.
And I mean, Stevens was 3 of 4. So their quarterbacking total was 8 of 17 for 118 and 2 interceptions. Yeah,
the guy sitting next to me was mad that I don't rate Shea Patterson as high because of the difference between him and McSorley. He's like, that's your best quarterback in the Big Ten?
Why are you telling the guy next to you what? Who the best quarterback in the Big Ten is?
He listens to the podcast and reads MGo blog. And he knows who I am.
Oh.
Yeah.
You have a fan.
We have a lot
of apparently not.
He's still listening and reading.
He has a heckler.
It's a heckler.
Yeah, I had a heckler.
I have a couple hecklers.
Yeah.
Couple,
so he's a hate reader?
And a couple fans. Oh, I have one. I had one guy, he got to push the button on the Muppets. He was really excited about that.
I don't know where to go.
We're just, we're moving on from that. We mentioned Quiddy Pay before. He did have an impressive rush where he was able to track down McSorley when it looked like he was going to bust a scramble for like 10 yards.
He got out of sort of the pocket up the field, yeah. And Pay ran him down. And
he was held on that play. Like that should have drawn a flag. And if he didn't get held on that play, I think that's a sack. So
yeah,
you know, I've been talking about how Pay is the responsible one in the boy band of the up and coming defensive linemen. And that was good to see him actually be able to get to the quarterback some, because that hasn't really happened yet. It might be coming. But hadn't seen it yet.
Well, and that, I mean, yes, he did get to the quarterback, but also ran down an elusive one. Like, I thought McSorley had a step, and he got him. I mean, yeah, obviously, if you give him another step or two, McSorley probably pulls away, but he used his space well and dove and got his ankles.
And Frames Jenklin got his garbage pass interference call on what was mutual hand fighting. I mean...
Okay.
The receivers got a hold of Metellus, and Metellus is like arm barring him and whatever.
So they're both committing a penalty, and they called
one. And they called one.
Okay.
And then, of course, immediately after that, you get the ball on a lie fumble. So that was nice. That'll get you out of
the
black pit.
There's a few tweets about that.
That'll get you out of the black pit of negative expectations. When you get a ball, don't lie fumble. Hell yes.
And then I thought that, so another thing is, Cannell came flying up to
knock. That was a good play.
Yeah, he came flying up from his deep safety role to knock McSorley out of bounds on a third down scramble. And Bush also played his guy well, because Bush was being blocked and spun to the side that I think Bush would have knocked him out a yard or two short, mm-hmm. had Cannell not knocked him out five.
So. And that was also directly in front of me, and that really felt like it was going to be a first down, mm-hmm. and then Cannell came up, and I was like... Hey, that's why we have a Cannell/Kovacs tag on the blog, which hasn't gotten much use. But
that was – and he had another one, I think, against Wisconsin or Michigan State. I can't remember which one, but I brought it up on that podcast.
He stuck Jonathan Taylor.
It was the state game where they had a jet sweep
where he came right up and just rocked a guy. Yeah. And that was – it wasn't the same situation, but it was sort of the same concept of where he sees, okay, this guy is beating the defense, and now I need to go shut it down.
The David Long interception was trap coverage again.
Ah.
So I don't know if this was just an inaccurate pass or if this is, again, a situation where the quarterback sees he's about to throw a disaster pass and pulls a string. But so that Long falls off his guy, and he's like going to hop up on the out route. It's way behind the receiver and then deflected for the interception. So it's working out pretty well, the trap stuff.
And another sighting of pick sixing.
Yeah, that throw was about 30 yards short.
He also ran away from some guys.
Offensive lineman, yes.
Well.
That's true. He kept his feet on the sideline impressively.
Yeah, I mean, they reviewed it, and he was in bounds. I mean,
that might be the worst pass I've seen this year.
That was live, I was like, I'm not sure who he's throwing to. And then I rewatched it, and I rewound it about 3 times, and I'm like, I still can't figure out who he's throwing.
He's trying to throw it to the deep guy on the sideline. The ball was literally like 20 or 30 yards
short.
So he's
trying to throw it to the deep guy, and then last second sees the short guy and like wants to throw to the short guy, but still throws the angle to the deep guy.
No, I think he's legitimately just trying to throw it to the deep guy.
I
It slips out of his hands.
I don't think there's any way to like Zapruder that one. You're not going to figure that one out. That's the.
I choose to think of it as a tiny baby throw from a large man. It's a tiny baby throw.
Anyway, I am happy for Brandon Watson when he does something like this. Again,
is he draftable? Is he draftable?
Well, see now. This, I love it that we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, it was a couple of years ago, we were not having this conversation.
No.
And now, like, not only, like, we've stated all year, he's pushing Hill off the field from time to time. And he did slip, but that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that's, like, a technique thing.
But it's he's just playing like a good coverage on your Rubbins racing routes.
Yeah. Answer the question, David.
Is he draftable?
I think he's draftable.
I think he gets a shot. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
It'll depend on how he tests.
He might be a late round I think pick, or he might be a guy who you sign as a free agent.
I think that's what he is. He's
for a team that can use him in specific roles.
Exactly. There's no reason to draft him, but like there's probably two or three teams that need a guy like that who can use him right now.
So he might not be draftable, but I think he can be an NFL player.
Yes. It was nice that they reviewed it. Just because, like, we got to sit and celebrate that
touchdown
a little bit
longer.
Reviews, like, I was mad that it was, like, they're reviewing it for a second.
Reviews
and, like,
that don't have to happen should never happen.
But the whole review we spent just rewatching the play, and then they go back to the players who are dancing around with
him. You're
the
same guy who's like, let's get the band out of Michigan State Stadium. I'm like,
don't hold me on that one. I love that. I want to have a segment on the band later. I love the band last time.
Well, we're not going to have a whole segment on the band, but we will have a whole segment about Frames Janklin.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. I know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go, Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
That's your ticket to 10. I got cold. Check was full. Where's Ali? With them. I be ballin' like a pro. Like a. I be ballin' like my brother Mo. Check West, I ain't a joke.
All right, does anyone have opinions about how good James Franklin is at game day opinions stuff?
I would take Brady Hoke. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not talking about running the whole program. Like, I'm talking about who's making my decisions on the sideline.
Who's the worst dude, Pol Pot or Castro? I don't know.
I think that if James Franklin sat on the sideline clapping while his players called the plays, they would probably do a better job.
I also think that Pol Pot is a worse dude. I actually have an opinion about that. Anyway.
So I will defend him on one call.
No.
Okay.
Well. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The re-kick. I just think that was the right call.
Give Speedy Eaglet a chance to bring it back.
We talked about this before when we're trying to address when do you take the 25 yards and all this stuff, and you don't when you can't move the ball on offense.
They had 38 yards at the time.
Right. And it's like late in the first half.
That's still like a real bad signal to send to your team.
It's a bad signal, but it's a reality-based signal.
So this is a funny moment here, because Brian normally takes the, you know, play the stats game, and the play the stats play is right. Give Speedy Eaglet a chance to bring it back. I think so.
Like what?
Because the worst that can happen is, like, okay, he kicks it to the 1 yard line. You just wave your hand and you still get on the 25. Nothing's changed. So, like,
well, you did give out 12 yards on this exchange here.
But you get a chance to return it, and you're getting nothing. So
he needs, like, 60
yards. I agree
with
David that it's the correct call from that standpoint. I do not think it's the correct call because it is completely waving the flag and telling your offense you guys are not going to move the ball.
Well, what do you guys think about calling timeout on 4th and 17 right before that?
I still don't understand.
I yelled, call timeout. And then he did it. So we started yelling other things to try to get him to do it. And he did some of them later.
Oh, my God.
Was there a reason? Did he give a reason in the press conference?
I cannot think of a single possible reason that you would do that. Like, it didn't end up burning him. But, like, what are you doing?
Like, I think Michigan at that point is just fine going into half if you run it down.
Yeah,
I don't think they're
getting the ball back with like 17 seconds.
And then I think they ran. Yeah, that was when they ran a play, thinking, "All right, maybe we have something." Shea didn't see what he wanted and took the sack, and then they went to halftime. But Michigan was just like, "Yeah, it's fine, 14-0. Let's go to halftime." And he was like, "I'm going to call timeout."
And if Michigan picks up like a 15-play chunk on that a 15-yard chunk on the first play there,
sure,
yeah, they're off and they're having a 1 minute.
Well, they had. I don't know if they had any timeouts.
They didn't.
They didn't have any timeouts. But they still had a minute. And, I mean, Nordine can kick a ball from 70 yards.
It was so strange that when they signaled timeout, I had assumed that Michigan had called the timeout, despite the fact that they didn't have any.
Chris Webber was in the building.
Let's immediately move on. So I think I figured out the chaos on the blocked field goal.
Okay.
Is that there were two chop blocks, one by each team, at the line of scrimmage.
Well, one took place a lot later.
No. One and then the penalty at the end was the unsportsmanlike conduct for the sideline.
Right.
So the one down.
No,
at the
they caught it below the knee. It was the
one was on the return. The Penn State one was on the return.
Well, yeah. It wasn't down at the 12. Otherwise, they wouldn't have.
No, it was when he picks up the fumble and he's rolling to the left, and then he starts to turn the corner, and that's when someone kind of goes out on Wenyu.
Which was probably should not have been called a flag. It looked like the guy dove it on Wenyu's legs, and Wenyu,
I mean, it didn't
like
really affect
stepped aside of it.
Yeah, it didn't really affect.
They chopped down the ability to do cut blocks this year, so I'm not too surprised by that.
Okay,
but like so, both those penalties, and then Penn State turns down the Michigan chop.
Well, they explained it on the broadcast of where they had to turn that down or they had to accept their own penalty to keep the ball. Otherwise, it would have been offsetting and it would have been fourth down again.
Right. And why did they get to turn that down on offsetting penalties and then Michigan couldn't do that 2 weeks ago? You don't know. You
don't know.
Nobody knows.
I don't. Nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody
but
knows.
They were explaining it to Franklin for a long time, and I really wish I could have been a fly on the wall for that conversation.
So what? Yeah. Okay. The clock stops when I call timeout.
Now do I need to call timeout after a turnover?
So when does the clock run?
Like how far back do they roll to like? Okay, no, James, right. listen, you're playing football, and
all right, I'm gonna need to know about the nature of time. So
Like, what was one of the refs getting, like, really frustrated with, like, how James did not understand anything he's talking about? And he was like, no, dude, look, Scott, it's cool. Well, just, I'm just going to explain it to him, and we'll make a call, okay? We'll walk him through this.
Relativity, is that relevant in this? Anyway.
Time and space are the same thing, James.
Man, Frames Janklin. Just like when you think, like, you've gone too far, and you've portrayed this person as a barely functional human being, and then he goes and does that, and you're just like, oh, he really does do this almost every week.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You can go back to every, maybe not last year, I can't remember specifically because I've tried to not, but every other game that Michigan has played against him,
yeah,
he has called a ridiculous timeout.
Well, he just did it last week, too.
Okay, but I'm talking about just against Michigan. Like, right. He does it outside of that.
No.
But every single year, I go into this game getting excited, being like, what is the timeout going to be this time?
Yeah, what boggling decision from
And GM. It's always different. It's not like he's doing the same thing. He's like, pulling out something that I didn't even think that he could do.
Surely he's running out of ways to screw up his timeouts. Surely he's, like, covering all of the bases.
Is this a bet?
You're assuming a
No,
lot.
It is no. No.
Is this a challenge? Will people start tweeting at you when they see new Frames Janklins?
I mean, please do.
we should build, like, a...
And if you can get it on camera.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank God for that one guy who got the clip of... Oh, my God. Anyway, have we expired our Frames Janklin content?
I think so.
He punted on fourth and short twice, but those are kind of defendable because
they couldn't run the ball at all.
Yeah.
Donovan Peoples-Jones came close to breaking two long, long punt returns.
Yes.
Like, he broke the first wave on both of those and got 20, 25 yards back on both and just couldn't. Like, it's kind of luck when you get to that third level. And
he also dove up and caught one that looked like it might hit the ground. And
yeah.
That was, like, peppersy.
I turned to my cousin and I'm like, Peppers catches that on the fly and doesn't fair catch it. So I
well, that okay. Well, he's not at that level yet. That's why I said in the realm of.
But yeah, he feels more comfortable back there and he's able to turn his athleticism into.
He's also communicating when he doesn't catch it. I mean, that was an issue last year. Yeah. Granted, he's a true freshman, but he's, you know, being very demonstrative, and obviously I can't hear him yelling, but you see his arms flailing, get away, and.
Well, he's also so Michigan kind of has this new like. Flyby technique where it's like we're just going to raise our hands and you can't run through us, and I think they've done a really good job of getting him past kind of the first wave by doing that, and I think they know that he's faster than most people and can get to the corner, and so he's able to make yards when it doesn't really look like there's anything there for normal humans.
Yeah,
they did finally get a holding call on the little bit of holding they do when the gunners are releasing.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of waiting for them to get called for that all year.
It's worth a shot.
Did either of you see the call on the Thomas return?
That was garbage.
Was it?
It was.
I didn't see it.
So it was on James Ross, and James Ross is engaged with a guy, but he's got his hands inside, and he basically buries the dude.
Hmm.
And this wasn't actually close to Thomas. It wouldn't have actually affected the play very much. The guy might have had an angle to get him out 5 yards earlier, but it wasn't.
On the broadcast, they said that the kickoff guy for Penn State, it was his first time ever in a game because they left their kickoff specialist at home for an injury reason or something, and he was a soccer player a year ago or something like that,
yeah.
And this was his first ever like game experience, and he found himself one-on-one with Ambry Thomas at the end of it, which didn't go... No, he wasn't the guy that knocked
him
out.
He wasn't the guy that knocked him out?
No.
All right, well then.
But I thought that was... It's kind of like when you replace an injured player in the field in baseball, and then the next ball is hit right at you, of course.
And Michigan punted on fourth and one from their own 45, which I thought that was the right call, which is not usually what I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they're up like 14 points.
They're up a couple scores or something?
They're up 14 points. It's in the third quarter. The opposing offense isn't really doing anything at all. So at that point, like, I know that your expectation is lower, but I feel like the lack of variance from the punt is worth it, just in terms of like, what are they going to do?
They were not be the case. And they had been going for it on a lot of fourth downs already, so it wasn't like established that Michigan was giving up opportunities.
But that particular one at that juncture in the game, I'm like, this is a rare situation where I think a fourth and one around midfield is a good punt.
And then what did you think about the two play sequence on third and five on the second drive when they run Ben Mason, clearly probably not going to get the first down, but setting up the fourth and short.
Yeah, I mean, that seemed fine to me, I guess. I mean, like, I would prefer...
Would you say run him again?
Maybe. I don't know.
That was the only thing.
Like, that's just, like, a kind of a play calling. Like, I thought the play was there.
Yeah.
Just didn't look him off.
And, yeah.
And the other thing is they punted on fourth and five.
I think it ended up being seven. They ended up taking a delay afterwards.
Yeah, it was fourth and seven.
After they called a timeout that Harbaugh did not want called. Very clearly when you're watching on the broadcast.
Right.
He was... Just no timeout, throwing his hands up, no timeout.
And a Penn State fan, when I was making fun of Frames Janklin, pointed that out, like, oh, Michigan called a timeout there that they didn't need to. I'm like, Jim Harbaugh is on the TV yelling, don't call a timeout.
And a player did.
But, so it's fourth and seven, and they come out in the punt formation, and they do this, like, kind of tricky, spooky thing where they have the entire line kind of motion in at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's not a false start because their hands aren't on the ground.
And right. They're not simulating a snap. They're
but they are like, and there's like some upset on the Penn State defensive line, and I'm like, ooh, that almost worked.
Yeah.
So they clearly didn't want to kick it from there, but again, I felt like given the situation in the game, you just want no variance at all. So at that point, sure, go kick it away. But they were trying to get it into fourth and two and go for it. So
yeah,
good idea. And despite one of his punts being a straight up pooch. Still 43.5 yards an attempt from Will Hart.
Yep.
And that's good stuff, man.
I mean, you can't always control how far you're supposed to kick the ball.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be put in different situations. He did have a long of 55, so you know that, well, he hit another one that's a deep bomb again. So, yeah, man.
The one thing that I would argue against the KJ Hamler, let's give him a chance decision by James Franklin, was Ben Mason. He's out there, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, you didn't see him until, like, a second before he was going to make the tackle. You're not sure that...
He ran through two different dudes.
He's lost in the pile, and then all of a sudden, there's Ben Mason. I had to watch that play four times on the replay to, like, figure out where he came from, because...
He came from inside the chest of someone else.
He just shows up all of a sudden from this mass of Penn State people trying to stop him.
Also, I really wanted them to like just chunk a squib kick at their upback, who was like a 350-pound lineman of some variety.
Oh, yeah. We were number 69.
Yeah.
Yeah. we were pointing and saying, kick it to him.
They should have kicked it to him. That would have been amazing.
As amazing as the Nebraska attempted onside kick?
No. Nothing has ever been quite that amazing.
I'm sure we'll get into that later.
This has been a very long version of this because we have so much Frames to cover. Man, I just can't.
Every year.
If you scripted this, no one would believe it. Nobody.
But that's what makes it so special.
It's true. All right, let's go.
Can we talk about the greatest thing about Penn State that they brought? Their band.
Okay.
I thought that halftime show was awesome. And, like, to get the precision that they got without being able to practice with each other except for once was pretty astounding. It was pretty cool.
My favorite part of it was the...
the contrast?
The Carl Grapentine versus any other band announcer contrast being stark relief.
Darth Vader versus Anakin.
Hey, you get the traditional Carl Grapentine voice, and it's like, and now we're going to do some more Goose Day!
That was the Michigan Marching Band.
Right. And the Penn State Blue Band!
All right, now let's talk to Jamie.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Welcome in, Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm wondering what Frames Janklin is doing this morning and how he's coping with daylight savings time. His breakfast game management has to be atrocious right now. So much burnt toast.
Oh, yes, of course. He probably called timeout and the toaster kept going.
Right.
All right, let's just blow through Michigan State 24, Maryland 3. Maryland gets 100 yards of offense. This is always coming for a team that just can't do anything against an organized defense.
Yeah, this is something we seem to talk about every 3 weeks or so with Maryland. You know, putting up a offensive box score that's going to be in the team photo of worst offensive performance of the season. The Temple game was terrible. That Iowa game a few weeks ago, you know, and then just yesterday. I mean, 100 yards on the dot, even only 1.9 yards per play, less than 1 yard per rush. You know, the big play Maryland offense, which is obviously very hit or miss, but boy, this is like a 4-strikeout game.
Indeed. This just seems like Matt Canada's offense. If you don't get out of position because of all their motions, they can't do anything at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that, you know, even though we all kind of sort of like Kasim Hill, it just doesn't help that there's no passing threat there at all.
Illinois 55, Minnesota 31. The Illini put up 646 yards of offense to a Minnesota team that kind of look like it might be turning the corner a little bit, and Illinois gets its first Big Ten win since 1952. I would call it the shocker of the week. What is going on?
Just when you thought it was safe to talk about the progress in, you know, in year two of PJ Fleck, just when you thought it was safe to make here come the robo quips, this happens. I mean, holy smokes, 10.8 yards per play for Illinois. 10.8 yards per play. Illinois, the Illini.
Good God.
Yeah. You know, and of course, you know, the one good thing we had talked about in Illinois all year was came through yesterday. Reggie Corbin, huge game running the football, 213 yards. Second play from scrimmage, he busted off a 72-yard touchdown run. And from then on, you know, the rot was on. Illinois scored touchdowns on their first two drives to start the game, three touchdowns to start the second half. So this was just a total joke from a Minnesota standpoint. The plus 4.5 yards per play advantage for Illinois yesterday was the fourth best in the country this weekend.
Illinois now has a better conference record than Minnesota.
Oof.
How? Did they beat Rutgers? They beat Rutgers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Technically.
Nope. And now they're 5 wins, and you know, and they've got
they can get to a bowl game?
Iowa. Yeah, they have at Nebraska, Iowa, and then at Northwestern. they could be the Big Ten's like last hope to keep Northwestern out of the Big Ten title game, all the while maybe going for their sixth or seventh win. It makes no sense.
Speaking of
Corbin's legit, you know, and AJ Bush, the graduate transfer at quarterback from Virginia Tech, you know, when he's in the game, he adds an element of running. You know, Epstein's been running the football well. You know, when you look at their S&P profile across the board, they have a top 25 rushing attack. You know, the problem is they're 100 or worse in literally everything else.
Okay, Notre Dame 31, Northwestern 21 in a game that was actually a 3-point game late in the fourth quarter. Until Notre Dame kind of shut the door. But this is a Northwestern offense that did not crack 250 yards of offense. Thorson has 4.9 yards an attempt. Isaiah Bowser does pretty decently, but their passing game just kind of collapses in on itself.
And, Notre Dame. Nothing. Go ahead. I was just going to say, 6.3 to 3.6 yards per play and less than 5 yards per pass for Thorson. And he also got sacked 5 times. So when you throw that into the passing attack, you know, you lose almost a whole another yard. So they were doing nothing anytime they dropped back.
Yeah, and I mean, Northwestern is a scrappy team. They were able to keep in contact here, but it was clear that Notre Dame was on another level. And
absolutely,
Ian Book throws for 10 yards an attempt, and that's going to be tough to overcome.
Yeah, you know, we were making our way back from Ann Arbor between the TV and the van and various iPod devices. We're going back. We're all watching LSU, Alabama, and Northwestern Notre Dame. And it seemed like anytime any of us looked at the Northwestern Notre Dame game, you know, Ian Book was getting a chunk play through the air. He had 15 passes yesterday of 10 or more yards, half of which came during what really should have been the decisive stretch to open the second half when they scored 17 points on their first three possessions to go 7-7 to 24-7. You know, Northwestern got a block punt and another touchdown to kind of get it close and sort of get back in the ball game, but that decisive stretch coming out of halftime was the best Ian Book had looked all year, and he'd been looking good on a week to week basis. But they were just rolling
through the air. I didn't think they could really run the ball real well, though. I mean, Book had
no,
a few,
they didn't.
But Dexter Williams was 19 for 56.
Yeah, and he was about as hot of a running back as you could find coming into the game. So that's definitely a plus for Northwestern. They've always been able to kind of. They always have had a tricky rush defense, haven't they? I mean, we've seen them shut down Michigan sometimes over the years when we were kind of like, how'd they do that? And, you know, I mean, so they can step up in that regard. I mean, they're well-coached defensively.
Well, they also have some dudes on that front seven, like Patty Fisher, the Gaz.
Yeah.
Like, they have some guys that are really legit run defenders. They just didn't have the secondary in this game.
Yeah.
Speaking of not having the secondary, Purdue.
Well, real quickly, before we leave, I should say that it was actually still a win for Northwestern because of some of the other things that happened in the Big Ten West. According to playoffstatus.com, Northwestern's chances of winning the Big Ten West yesterday, despite losing to Notre Dame, which obviously was non-conference, went from 50% to 74%. And we're looking more and more likely that we're going to have a Big Ten Conference Championship game participant that went winless and out of conference play.
Big Ten?
Big Ten. We could also talk about Northwestern possibly getting into that game with a losing record, but that's we're going to leave that for the next week's opponent watch.
The major reason that Northwestern's Big Ten divisional championship percentage went up is that Iowa lost to Purdue. David Blau goes for 333 yards at more than 10 per attempt because the Iowa finally finds a team that is able to just rock and roll against their freshman cornerbacks.
Yeah,
Iowa
absolutely.
Fights back fairly well, but they lose on a last-second field goal. This was like a tenth last-second field goal because at that point the score is 36-35. So this is a do or die, and it is a do.
Yeah. I mean, another week, another fun Purdue game. I mean, this has been going on since game one of the Brohm era last year against Louisville. I mean, they've really become a real fun watch. And when you look at Purdue, they started the season 0-3, and all three of their losses were to unranked teams. But now they've dragged themselves to with one game of bowl eligibility, and they've done it by beating three ranked teams at home. And they had been 0-18 against ranked teams coming into this year. So quite a turnaround.
And with Louisville losing to Clemson 77-16, you got to wonder if this is the week that maybe they pull the trigger there. I know people are saying that they don't have the money to fire Petrino, but do they have the money to keep Petrino? Like, how are ticket sales going to be next year?
Yeah, I don't know. Boy, that team.
Didn't you say that program has
they have collapsed without Lamar Jackson. I mean, it is startling. I mean, that yesterday was just incredible. 77-16 against Clemson. Wow.
Yeah. Wisconsin 31, Rutgers 17, which is alarming for Wisconsin fans because Rutgers cracks 300 yards of offense. Hornibrook throws for 92 yards on 16 attempts. I mean, Jonathan Taylor goes off 27 carries, 208 yards, kind of what you would expect against Rutgers. But this is 31-17. This isn't the pacing that you would expect from, anyone with a pulse against Rutgers.
Yeah, no. I mean, it just kind of looked like Wisconsin was just sleepwalking. I mean, that's sort of the college football cliche. They've had a couple tough losses. Their divisional hopes look dead. They're playing Rutgers. Who cares? I mean, it just sort of all added up to a real choppy game. And Rutgers' turnover luck margin was plus 2.7. So that has a lot to do with how that game cosmetically, looked like a 14-point game instead of maybe something that was twice as much.
Right.
And Jack Cohn.
But still, Rutgers still was putting up the yards. That was something. And we sort of talked about how Wisconsin's defense has lost some of its shine this year.
Did Hornibrook get hurt, or was he just pulled due to ineffectiveness? Because Cohn also came in and was 5-7 for 64.
I bet it was ineffectiveness because he had 2 picks in 16 attempts against the Rutgers.
Oof. I just wonder if he was dinged from last week or a couple weeks ago.
Possibly. I mean, that would be the best case scenario for Wisconsin. I mean, at this point, we want Wisconsin to win out just so they look good on our resume. And this is a little bit ominous.
Oh, well. Gosh, and they play Penn State next. I mean, I have no clue what's going to happen in that game.
No, that one's kind of a wash.
Somebody's got to get off the mat. And Brian, I expect you to be live blogging the Paul Christ and game pitching decision. I know that you're busy a lot in football season, but that's what you have to do next Saturday.
Oh my God, the decision off between Turtle and Frames.
I know the over under on punts in the opposing team territory set at 4.5.
At least Michigan plays Rutgers, so
you'll have something to watch.
Yeah.
Hornibrook had less than 100 yards. We had, I think, 4 quarterbacks yesterday. The 4 starting quarterbacks that passed for less than 100 yards: McSorley, Hornibrook, and then both quarterbacks in the Maryland-Michigan State game. So, good job, everybody.
Yeah. Finally, Ohio State 36, Nebraska 31. This is a dead even game that goes into the fourth quarter. Ohio State gets 480 yards against Nebraska's very bad defense. Nebraska puts up 450 yards. And part of that is Taylor Martinez looked like a legitimately very good quarterback. Like, he was making some throws. He ran for 72 yards. Like, this wasn't the typical 2-6 team hangs with the big team. Like, it doesn't – I've been saying this all year, but Nebraska is much better than their record. Still, I mean, Michigan gave it to Nebraska, and Ohio State was in a ball game with them.
Yeah. I mean, by all rights, Nebraska, instead of 2-6 coming into that game, should be fighting for, legit, bowl eligibility. They had a win expectancy of over 90% in their opener, and I think they've lost 2 other games this year where their win expectancy was better than 60%. So they've had just, a lot of bad luck. And I think one thing we have to mention how this game has gone the last 2 seasons. Ohio State had outscored Nebraska 118-17 the last 2 years. And it had been 3 games against these teams since Nebraska had forced Ohio State to punt. And they forced 5-3 and outs yesterday. 5-3 and outs out of 13 drives, although one of those 3 and outs for Ohio State was a 4 and out. They went for it on 4th down, and they got stuffed. And that's been a theme. We're jumping around a lot, I'm sorry, but that's been a theme we've talked about all year for Ohio State. This is the 5th time in the last 6 games that they've been stuffed on a 4th down run and turned it over on down. Purdue was the only time that they avoided that fate, but going back 2 weeks, don't forget, they went for it on 4th-and-2 near the end zone and did a slant pattern into traffic and didn't convert. So, yikes.
It does seem like Ohio State made some fixes to their ground game. So, J.K. Dobbins goes for 163. Weber goes for 91 yards on 9 carries. They're playing a very bad rush defense. I mean, that's one thing. But they've been really scuffling so far this year, and they've apparently used the bye week to kind of figure out how they're going to run the ball without having a running quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yes, that is – that is correct. I mean, you look at the box score. I think that you know, that was probably the best their tailbacks have looked since the Michigan State game last year. So almost a full season. You know, but on the other hand, you know, we mentioned the fourth down stop. But go to the end of the game when it's 30-21 in the fourth quarter, and they're trying to salt the game away. You know, and what do? They get first and 10. They throw three passes in a row, three bad incompletions, ball back to Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't do anything. They get the ball again, and they take a two-yard loss on a first down run, and then two more incomplete passes, punt to Nebraska. Big play. All of a sudden, Nebraska is cutting it to within one score. So, yes, they worked on the running game, but, boy, when it came down to it, you know, in the fourth quarter when they wanted to salt that game away, they were still passing the ball on standard downs.
That is, I mean, you watch Ohio State and you're like, I don't recognize this team sometimes.
Nope.
Yeah.
Which is a very nice thing to think for a Michigan fan.
I know. I definitely agree. But it was it was funny. A few weeks ago, we talked about how we all slowly but surely started keeping an eye on that Ohio State Minnesota game because we were like, is something happening? But like, we kind of all expected, you know, in our tailgate group, we all kind of thought Nebraska was going to give Ohio State a little bit of a run, and a lot of that just has to do with how, you know, shaky they've looked, and it kind of happened. So,
yeah, and if they were going to be able to patch some holes on their defense, it might have come over the bye week, and that really doesn't look like it happened. So, a lot of linebackers flying all over the place, not showing up in the right spot in it. And I mean, how much pressure did they get on Adrian Martinez in this game? It didn't feel like very much.
I didn't see much of it. I mean, I only watched some of the first half.
Right.
But he seemed to
have... How many sacks did he suffer?
Let's see. I'm looking it up right now. I know that there was a drive in the first half when it was 16-9, when Ohio State kind of had taken it, or 16-7, rather, when they took it over. They got a third down sack. And that was really their only sack of the game.
That was it?
Not really. It was their only sack of the game.
So, I mean, this doesn't really seem like, you know, you have Joey Bosa and you... Not Joey Bosa. Whatever.
Nick Bosa.
Yeah. And you're like, all right, this guy kind of feels like the Lamar Jackson of the Ohio State defense. Can I say that? Or like he might have patched a lot of holes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just so striking how many big plays they give up. So, I mean, if you can continue to keep that pressure down, you can get chunk plays against these guys all game. And even with Bosa, you know, going back to early in the year, TCU stayed in that game, you know, early on because they were getting chunk plays, but it's remarkable to see they're 87th in the country right now giving up plays of 10 or more yards, 134. That's twice as many almost as Michigan. And a third of those are going for 20 or more yards. So another week, another data point that back seven just has trouble with the smorgasbord of different defensive skills.
Back to the point about the pass rush, you know, when Michigan played Nebraska, Adrian Martinez played and they took him out at halftime. Just because he was getting so battered, they're like, this isn't worth it. So it just seems like everything is pointing to Michigan being favored in Columbus for
good
reasons.
Even the matchups, which is weird.
Yeah, it's, I mean, right? I mean, I don't want to feel as good about this game as I feel about it, because then if we lose, I'm going to be like, oh, how many bottles of liquor can I drink in one night?
I know. Well, even if they win, though, how many bottles of liquor can you drink in one night?
But you get out the nice whiskey, you sit in front of the fire, you sip your whiskey. It's a totally different variety of drinking and a much less destructive one.
Right, absolutely. But you're dead on. It's a weird feeling how confident we all are.
Should be confident.
Like, I think, yeah. And we'll see how they do against Michigan State next week. I think that's right up there with Wisconsin-Penn State is a game that I really have no idea how it's going to go down.
Man, if Michigan State wins that to, like, essentially clinch the division for Michigan.
Talk about a troll job.
That would be nice.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have the weather on order.
Oh, man, I'm gonna be like, tweeting, let's go Spartans. All people are going to hate it. It's going to be amazing.
Right. Brian Cook. Honorary Spartan dog.
Yeah.
Will you have a bone and wear your helmet pregame?
I will have my green bone. I'll be like, I'm waving my green bone for my dogs.
Right.
Let's go.
Don't forget to get your family and all your neighbors to do it. It would do a Red Rover walk down your street.
Do you have anything else there, Jamie?
Now, you guys have probably covered everything, you know, important about the Michigan game. But just in case, if you have not, I think we can I wanted to just mention that the Penn State 5 losses in by a total of 12 total points, that is that stretch is now bookended by Woodsheds in Ann Arbor. And James Franklin is now 0-3 against Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State for the third time in his 5 years at Penn State.
So are those his rivals?
I would say so.
I think their rivalry is Maryland. I don't really know what their record is against Maryland.
I thought their whole slogan is that they're unrivaled.
That's
oh yeah.
I don't know.
So now you don't get to have that stat.
We have
because
not yet,
they don't have rivals.
We have not yet pointed out that Michigan was like stealing all of Penn State's really obnoxious celebrations.
Oh my gosh, that was crazy. Even right down to Donovan Peoples-Jones doing the Saquon Barkley after that touchdown.
Man, Donovan Peoples-Jones is looking you up with his touchdown celebrations.
Yeah.
Seth is doing all of them right now.
Like if Donovan Peoples-Jones scored a touchdown on me, he would know exactly what Quiz Bowl game I regret from high school. And he would yell the question I got wrong to lose the game at me. That's how hardcore Donovan Peoples-Jones is about scoring touchdowns on people.
I like it. I like the swag of this team.
What's your deal? It's a what's your deal team.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you also mention that was that Tommy Stevens, congratulations, you now joined Stanley Jackson. Worst thrown interception by an opponent.
We touched
Stadium.
On that, yeah.
I mean, that was crazy. And, you know, I don't think that the stadium wasn't as loud during that moment yesterday as it was in 97 for obvious reasons, but it touched off maybe the longest stretch of like good times feeling in that stadium that we've felt in years, because it came right after the 21-0 touchdown. It came right before the fourth quarter break the break between the third and fourth quarter. I mean, it was just like a 10-minute love-in after that pick six. So, It's right up there with Stanley Jackson.
I think the interesting thing is that the attitude apparently comes from Harbaugh. It's permeated his players and now is almost like taking over the Michigan fan base. And that's not really something that you generally see from the Michigan fan base. Like, they come off as kind of arrogant, but it's more like just kind of saying a bunch of things that they think they know and coming off of just... But yeah, I mean,
I think you're subtweeting me.
No, not you. Or am I?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So... But the point is that people kind of love this, like, almost psychopathic killerness to them that they just want to just rip your soul out.
Win with character, win with cruelty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It always comes back to Harbaugh.
Yeah. You know, and they're also just doing it in such smash-mouth fashion, too. I mean, I'm sure you touched on Higdon, just another 100-yard game. You know, he's on pace to crack the top 20 single-season rushing list just in the regular season game. And if you tack on, you know, a single postseason game, he's going to crack the top 10 at this pace. And, you know, Brian, I know that you've been a fan of Higdon from the get-go. You know, I've kind of liked him, you know, as well, not as much as you, but I still never would have thought that he would put together a season like this, especially with the offensive line play that we've seen in recent years. So the whole rushing offense is just, you know, amazing. And I think that's something that nobody would have expected.
It's so good that he only finished with 994 rushing yards last year.
Yeah, I feel like that's been burning him.
Hey, Jamie.
Like that drove him in the offseason, because he's just putting on a show. He tied Chris Perry for his 1,200 yard game for his career, so he's climbing up that list too. Give him another one, and he's going to be in the top 10 in that list. So what a senior season for Gronk.
Indeed. Jamie, we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. When you say Don Brown,
you've said it all.